We've made an introduction in the book of Nehemiah, spent a couple of weeks just kind of talking about how we got there, and how the story comes about from Nehemiah and who he is. And so as we get into the lesson today, we get a little bit farther into this lesson, we see that there's been some time that has passed since the Bible story began. 4 months or so have passed since Nehemiah received word from those who came back from Jerusalem that the city is a mess, that the walls have not been rebuilt, and that the people there were in disgrace. All of this was news that just greatly troubled Nehemiah, those being his people. And so we find that for a period of 4 months that Nehemiah mourned and fasted and prayed. We talked a good deal about the prayer that we find in chapter 1 and just his attitude toward God and the things that he was asking for, the things that he was looking for. And as we get into chapter 2, I think we're seeing a result of that prayer, a response to that prayer. Because what Nehemiah needed, what he had prayed for, was an opportunity to stand before the king, to petition the king for his people in Jerusalem and for the needs that were there. And so he prayed to God to be attentive to him, to give him success by granting him favor before the king. Indeed, Nehemiah would need the help of God to be able to not only address the king, but be able to move the king in such a way that the king would allow him to go to Jerusalem and to go and to try to effect any kind of a change there, to try to help the people there in any way. And you would have to presume that Nehemiah was aware of the fact that it was King Artaxerxes, whom he served, who actually put a stop to the rebuilding of the city of Jerusalem. And so you think about that, that in fact Nehemiah is going to approach the king and say, will you send me back, or will you send me to Jerusalem so that I can help rebuild the city, when it was in fact the king who stopped the rebuilding. Now, why had the king stopped the rebuilding? What would he care about Jerusalem? Why would he have stopped the rebuilding of the city? Why did he do that? Yeah. Jerusalem, of course, had a reputation, too, of being a city of some turmoil and some revolt. And as the king inquired about that, it was, as was suggested by some of his other officials, you know, and those other officials, not wanting to see the city rebuilt, encouraged the king, well, don't let them rebuild, because you will not get tribute, you'll not get taxes, you know, if they build the city and appoint their own king. And so the king had sent word to stop the building of the city. Well, now, what's interesting to me with this is that, in fact, the book of Ezra would record that for us, chapter 4, is that now Nehemiah is going to go to the very king that stopped the rebuilding of the city and plead his case that he could help his people in Jerusalem. You know, that just strikes me as being incredibly strong and gutsy, you know, to do that. When you're going to the one who has the power to say to the dungeon, you know, to request his help. But you see, this goes back to the point of what we had said here previously. Nehemiah would need the help of the mighty one to move the one who was the ruler in the world, you know, in King Artaxerxes. You see, he would have to have the power and strength of God to be able to accomplish anything here that he was wanting to do. And so the appeal of Nehemiah then was no small thing, and had to wonder what would happen when he went before the king. And so as we get into the story today, into the lesson today, it's been 4 months. He's had 4 months of mourning, fasting, and praying, you know, about this time and this event as he stands before the king. And I find this to be very interesting, how he approaches the king and what he says to the king. And that'll be a part of our study as we go forward today. That he's been 4 months. You know, 4 months, that's not just a terribly long period of time. But have you ever waited 4 months for something that you really, really wanted to do? And 4 months seems like 4 years or seems like an eternity. I mean, can't you imagine what 4 months must have seemed like to Nehemiah? As he was waiting first just for the opportunity to be able to approach the king. And that's kind of where we take up in our story today. Nehemiah chapter 2. And in fact, actually, yeah, we take up the very last part of chapter 1, and we begin reading there. I was a cupbearer to the king. In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was brought for him, I took the wine and gave it to the king. I had not been sad in his presence before, so the king asked me, "Why does your face look so sad when you are not ill?" "This can be nothing but sadness of heart." I was very much afraid, but I said to the king, "May the king live forever. Why should my face not look sad when the city where my fathers are buried lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire?" And the king said to me, "What is it you want?" Then I prayed to the God of heaven. And I answered the king, "If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in his sight, let him send me to the city in Judah where my fathers are buried so that I can rebuild it." Then the king, with the queen sitting beside him, asked me, "How long will your journey take, and when will you get back?" It pleased the king to send me, so I set a time. I also said to him, "If it pleases the king, may I have letters to the governors of the Trans-Euphrates so that it will provide me safe conduct until I arrive in Judah. And may I have a letter to Asaph, keeper of the king's forest, so he'll give me timber to make beams for the gates of the citadel by the temple and for the city wall and for the residence I will occupy." And because the gracious hand of God was upon me, the king granted my requests. So I went to the governors of Trans-Euphrates and gave them the king's letters. The king had also sent army officers and cavalry with me. When Sanballat and the Horonite and Tobiah, the Ammonite official, heard about this, they were very much disturbed that someone had come to promote the welfare of the Israelites. Well, that's part of the story today that we're looking at. Let's kind of let this unfold a little bit. The fact that Nehemiah was a cupbearer to the king, what exactly does that mean? What does it entail? What does it mean to be a cupbearer? What is his relationship to the king? What do we know about that? He tastes the food, okay?
Very close personal relationship.
Why would he be so close? I mean, he's a servant. He's just a servant.
He's going to be tasting the food from the very cup that the king is going to drink from.
You know, I suppose there are servants that sweep the floor, and then there are servants that protect your life. And it is said by some, you know, that there was no servant, so to speak, that was closer to the king than the cupbearer. I mean, he had the king's life in his hand. Because he was the one who would taste the food. He would taste the wine and the drink, you know, before it was given to the king, to make sure nobody had poisoned it, nobody had disturbed it in any way. And so what else was that? Does that say then about the cupbearer and the relationship with the king?
Extreme trust.
Extreme trust. I mean, there have to be a high level of trust here. What else would we say? What else can we see with this? I mean, this is a prized position. You know, that's interesting, too. You know, that, I mean, everybody has an off day, right? A day where you're just kind of not with the program. You're not all smiles. Well, when you served the king, you did not enjoy those days. You couldn't have those days. In the book of Esther, actually, we get some indication with Mordecai that some things that were said, that when you approached the king, you could not do it with a sad countenance. You just didn't go before the king when you were unhappy. I mean, in fact, even as I understand, some have said it was against the law of the Persians to go before the king with a sad countenance or unhappy. It was against the law. And so, you know, keeping some of that in mind here with Nehemiah the cupbearer, who would be before the king every day, you know, I guess you would kind of learn one another's personality somewhat, wouldn't you? I'm not sure how much personality you can actually show as a cupbearer. You're a servant, remember? But the king noticed something. I mean, for 4 months, Nehemiah has been concerned about his people in Jerusalem. For 4 months, he has mourned and fasted and prayed. And I suppose for a period of time, the king's not noticed that. Nehemiah has been able to disguise that, but on this day, no more. And the king says, what's wrong? It's interesting to me that, number one, the king would ask, what's wrong? As opposed to, get out of my sight. What does that say? There was some kind of a personal bond there. There was a trust level. There was integrity, you know, with the relationship with Nehemiah.
That trust is pretty obvious later on when he asked to go to Jerusalem and the king said, how are you going to be gone?
That's right. Yeah, I want you back. That's interesting, too. I mean, he was willing to grant the request of Nehemiah, but at the same time wanted him back, too. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I'm sure, yeah. I mean, here is someone that you have full, you're trusting your life to this person. You know, not somebody easy to give up. But it also says something about, you know, the relationship, that he's willing to let him go. That this is something that was so important to Nehemiah that the king would actually say, okay, I'm willing to do without your services for a while. How long are you going to be gone? You know, what exactly do you want to do? And when are you coming back? That's just interesting to me.
And not only that he was willing to let him go, but Nehemiah was willing to go. This is the plum job in the kingdom. He sleeps in the palace, eats off the king's table, literally.
Yes.
If he's going to give something up, it's Nehemiah.
I think this is a major point here, too. You know, I mean, the focus now being totally on Nehemiah. You know, and some of the benefits of being the cupbearer. Yes, you're a servant of the king. Yes, you're at his beck and call. But oh, by the way, if you need something to eat, have all you want. I mean, he ate well. He was in the palace. And where he was going would offer nothing of that sort. Where he was wanting to go would offer nothing of that sort. Okay, now we're seeing something else about Nehemiah. He's not selfish in any way. He's not looking out just for his own good. I mean, at this point, he has, I don't want to say a cush job, I don't know if it's a cush job, but he has a favorable job. You know, I mean, he still is a servant, he works for the king. And oh yeah, by the way, if someone poisons the food, you know, he's the one that's going to eat it. You know, so there's some risk to the job too. But, you know, I mean, he's living in the palace.
Comfortable.
Very comfortable. And yet now he's looking at and willing to leave that.
It's a sacrifice.
It's a sacrifice. Oh, so now we're seeing more about the man Nehemiah here, aren't we? As this kind of unfolds, interesting things to think about. And then we start considering more about what he's wanting to do and where he's wanting to go. Opportunity finally came to, you know, approach the king. And the king is asking questions. You know, I'm not exactly sure what it would have been like to approach the king, to have an audience with the king, but I can only imagine that, as we would say, when you get there, you better have your ducks in a row. You better know what you want to say and how you want to say it and get it out, because the king has got other things to do. I mean, it's just like if you had to make a presentation, whether it's at work or at school or something like that, and you have to be to the point. You make the points that are needed and get on with some things. Well, Nehemiah's had 4 months of planning. And you look at the exchange that takes place here, and I find this just to be very interesting. Now, when the king notices, what's wrong? You have a sad face. What is wrong? Okay, the moment has come. For Nehemiah, is this fear or excitement he should feel?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, there's reason for both. You know, I mean, fear, he's got to address the king. How is this going to go? You know, am I going to be in the dungeon tonight? Or is he going to grant my request? And excitement from the standpoint, okay, finally. Okay, this is coming out. And I'm going to make my request. And so he's to the point. Interesting to me. The king said to me, "What is it you want?" Then I prayed to the God of heaven. All right. What do we take from that? He fell down on his knees and prayed to God. No, he's in the presence of the king right now.
Well, it was very quick. Your God helped me know what to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here we go, God.
I've been praying for this.
Yeah. Put the right on this, man.
Yeah. You ever feel that way? You ever have that kind of moment?
Sure.
That kind of prayer? It's like I experienced that a lot myself. Every time I step up here. You wonder what's going through my mind when I'm walking up in the pulpit? I'll tell you right now. I understand Nehemiah. And so I just find that interesting. Yes.
There's something wrong with Nehemiah. This is that is part. And that opens the door for Nehemiah.
Don't you wonder, would Nehemiah have ever opened that door? He was waiting for the king. I mean, I'm not sure Nehemiah could have opened that door. It was the king who had to say, "What's wrong? What is it you want?" I mean, how would you say that? How would you say to the king, I have a really big request. I want to talk with you. I'm just not sure the cupbearer, even the cupbearer, would be in that position to be able to do that. Going back to a previous point, that I think we have to see and understand the hand of God in the events here as they're unfolding. And that as Nehemiah had been already praying to God and fasting and mourning, you know, for all this process of time, that it is only with the hand of God that he has hope of addressing the king and being able to get what he needs from the king.
And also, at what point during his praying and fasting did he come to the conclusion that he could go fix it? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
His cupbearer, did he have any carpentry experience, wall building experience? I don't know.
Right.
At some point during this, and no time during this prayer, this long prayer and fasting to God, is there any suggestion that had he come to the conclusion what needs to be done here is I need to go and get this done.
Mm-hmm.
That may have happened in this span of time when he made this quick prayer to God and then answered the question. That may have been the first time that this thought came into his mind.
What is it that you want?
That what I want is I should go. Mm-hmm. I should go.
Well, he has a response that is just, I mean, he articulates the needs very well. I mean, he's had some time to work this through and to think about it.
This strikes me as being just very, very parallel to the pastor.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
How you deal with the king.
Mm-hmm.
You have to wait.
And the hand of God involved in that. We see that in Esther's story, we see here too.
Well, Esther was told, prophets put you in
yes.
place.
Take advantage of the position now.
And you're the one who's put here because you're the one who can deal with it. She really didn't want to. Nehemiah didn't say he didn't want to, but he was put in a position to take care of it.
That's right.
And as far as his position as a cupbearer, more than likely he had some oversight of everything that went on in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Not back to cooking, but who was
that's
doing
right.
And he had
to, was the leader of that.
He had to vet everyone and make sure they were comfortable.
That's it.
Nehemiah's plans and Nehemiah's mind and Nehemiah's willingness.
Consider the exchange here that takes place. Verse 7. So Nehemiah says to the king, "If it pleases the king, may I have letters to the governors of Trans-Euphrates so that they will provide me safe conduct until I arrive in Judah. And may I have a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, so he will give me timber and to make beams for the city and all. And be gracious, and because of the gracious hand of my God was upon me, the king granted my request." It was interesting the things that he asked for here. I mean, he had thought through enough to know, and that God had led him enough to know what he needed. I mean, it wasn't a matter of just the king saying, "Well, okay, you go on to Jerusalem. I want you to come back as soon as you can. Go on, you know, keep well." Well, I wonder how far he would have gone. You know, I wonder how that would work. I mean, he had a long distance to travel. You know, I wonder how that would have gone.
I think that the king is somewhat relieved when he asks the question because his cupbearer is mm-hmm. not acting wrong. Mm-hmm. He's a little down.
Oh, so that's what's wrong.
Yeah. It could have been that he's worried about a conspiracy against me.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, is that all you need?
Okay.
Well, let me help you with that.
Imagine,
and so he sends Nehemiah with letters for safe passage. But even more than that, you know, it sends him as well with army officers and a cavalry. I mean, that's pretty amazing. You know, so it's not only that, you know, he comes to some areas and the governor says, "And who are you? And where do you think you're going?" "From the king. These guys will vouch for me." You know? It's like, "Oh, please, come on through. Do you need anything to eat on the way?" You know, the door was open, so to speak. And even to be able to do the rebuilding, here was some of the forethought and the blessing of the rebuilding. They're going to need some timber, aren't they? Well, it just so happens that the king has a forest nearby. And so he has a letter to the keeper of the forest, you know, to be able to take and to get what he needs. Just interesting, isn't it? Okay, prayers answered, prayers coming about.
I find it also interesting that he not only asked for timbers to rebuild the gates, but he asked for a little bit of lumber to build a tough little house too.
Yes, yeah.
So there's a little of his personality that seems mm-hmm. to come out in this.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, I think
he's going to be there for a while.
Yeah, having lived in the palace, of course he wants a real house.
Yeah, a place to stay, a place to live. Interesting. You got your outline on the second page on the back. Let's just talk this around and through just a little bit more. As we mentioned in the previous lesson, there are some interesting applications that can be made to leadership when we study Nehemiah. And as I was kind of working through this lesson, something that just stood out to me in this lesson was leaders must have right priorities. And really what I mean by that is, I mean, you know, a lot of people, I do a lot of times, a lot of days I have to sit down and I kind of make a list of some of the things that I have to do in the day. And now you have to kind of go back and start prioritizing the list and you realize I can't get this all done today. I need to do this, and I've got to do this, and this is priority one. And I'm not really talking about those kinds of priorities. No, that's not the kind of priorities I'm talking about. I'm talking about personal priorities, character, and integrity-type priorities. Nehemiah was not selfish. First point. He was not looking out just for his own best interests. If he was looking out only for his own best interests, as was said, he had stayed at the palace. If he was only concerned about himself, he was eating well, and he had a good place to stay in the palace. Good leaders cannot be selfish. That always comes around in a negative way when leaders are selfish. And so it becomes evident, even more so as the story goes on, that Nehemiah was seeking what was best for his people, and of course, seeking what was best in the eyes of God. And so the fact that Nehemiah was not selfish is something that just really stands out. Now let's work on this for a minute. And think about some points here that we could make. I mean, for Nehemiah, he was not selfish. What all does that imply? What kind of position does that put him in? What are some of the risks that could come from that? What are some points we need to see in the character of Nehemiah that we need to find in our life? What do you say, Neil?
Well, he's not overbearing, but he doesn't overuse his authority.
Mm-hmm.
He's coming from the king. He could have walked into Jerusalem and said, I want this house to be that.
Mm-hmm. He had those letters from the king.
But he built his own.
Mm-hmm.
Because he being the good graces of the people that was there, he came in not taking from them, but helping them.
And we really see how that comes out in the second half of the chapter. His attitude regarding some of that. That's right. What else would you say? Yes.
There's a lot that you learn when you're a parent. And most people, when they get to be some age, have been on both sides of leadership positions.
Mm-hmm.
And having oversight over people, and then at other times being yourself as a servant or a employee. Something of that sort, where you're the person needing something from someone else. But in the case of parents are more apt to grant children their request if they're not self-centered and
mm-hmm.
brass and just
mm-hmm.
give me all the time. You know, they go to the store and they want everything on the shelves and start putting it in the cart. That's not going to work. But if they're submissive and they have a sense of they're negotiate respectfully what they need or what they want, then the parent is more likely to give that thing. That's what we see. I think
it's easier to work with that kind of attitude.
Very respectful.
Yeah. There's something else I see here, and this may sound peculiar, I don't know. Nehemiah was not afraid to show emotion. I mean, you see that? I mean, okay, guys, sometimes we don't want anybody to see when things are bad. You know, you don't want to tell anybody you're having a bad day kind of a thing. Guys, particularly, I think, are that way. Nehemiah was not afraid to show emotion. I mean, and to the king, no less. That kind of stood out to me just a little bit. You know, that something to think about. Did that strike you at all? See?
I think that Nehemiah's number one priority was trying to help God's people.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he was coming from.
Yes. Yes, it was. Again, he wasn't selfish.
Right.
He was looking out for the best of some others.
When the king asked him what he wanted, he prayed.
Mm-hmm.
That's remarkable to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing he did.
It's almost a surprise to me. It doesn't say that I took a big gasp and then I answered the king. No. He prayed and then answered the king. Nehemiah met the challenge that was before him with prayer. I mean, and we've said a lot about that, but I think it just stands out as such a powerful point that if there's anything we walk away from today's study with is that Nehemiah prayed, and that Nehemiah prayed, and he prayed, and he prayed. I mean, if we walk with nothing else, let's have that embedded in our mind today. He found strength in times of challenge from the one who can give strength, from God. And that was his source. And so for these months, he has prayed and petitioned God before he approached the king. And then even immediately before he approached the king, petitioned God again. So you cannot help but notice who was the source of strength for Nehemiah. And then when he had the opportunity to address the king, verse 7 said, remember, And because the gracious hand of my God was upon me, the king granted my request. What would you say to that passage? What do you say? Because the gracious hand of my God was upon me, the king granted my request. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Prayers that were answered. What else would you say? What else stands out with that?
Humility.
Yeah, I think humility is something else that stands out with that. You know, it wasn't that, man, I made quite a presentation before the king. I mean, he gave me everything I wanted and more. Wow. He was willing to do some things, really do some things in God's time, and maybe not in his own. I mean, for 4 months, don't you suppose he was wishing that this could be resolved and he could move on with some things, some issues? I'm afraid I would be that way. You know, sometimes when you get set on a project and something that has to be done, you just want to get it done. And again, like we said before, 4 months, that doesn't seem like a long time often in retrospect, but at the time, day after day after day, that must have seemed like a long time. But it was in God's time for some things to come about. And because the gracious hand of my God was upon me, the king granted my request. The fact that he sees and he acknowledges the fact that it's God's will that these things come about is a very powerful point. Nehemiah also rejected the notion to respond hastily. Okay, how many of us, you know, when there's some kind of event comes up in our life that we think has to be dealt with, we deal with the event immediately and in retrospect think, oh, I should have thought that thing through just a little more. You been there? I mean, most of us. Well, if I had just thought about that for 5 minutes, I would have done this and this instead of that. And this is just a very powerful point to me. Why 4 months? I don't know. But in the way that the story is told and the way Nehemiah tells the story and the conclusion of some of these events, and because the gracious hand of God was upon me, the king granted my request, tells me that God had a whole lot to do with the timing of this. He waited for the right time. And when the right door of opportunity opened up, he was ready. He knew what he needed to say. And he articulated himself well what needed to be said. And the king responded in a favorable way. You know, it's really hard to wait sometimes. It is really hard to wait, to not respond just out of emotion, especially as emotion kind of gets caged up within us at times. And then we respond in ways often not even appropriate, not even to mention not timely. But often we need some time to kind of think some things through and process some things through to be able to address a situation in the way it should be.
The king, I don't believe, was had a lot against the Israelites because he had allowed them to go back to their place. He had allowed them to start building the walls. He wasn't opposed to that. His advisors were. Mm-hmm. And the advisors said, hey, you know, if they build the walls back, this isn't good for us.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't something that he was totally against in his mind anyway. The people had probably made a favorable reasonable people. And now this is an opportunity for him to overthrow what his advisor had
I think it says,
and he's going,
it says a whole lot about the trust that he had in Nehemiah, in the integrity of Nehemiah. It also says a whole lot about the hand of God being in this, as Nehemiah would acknowledge. I mean, there was no credit, going back to the fact of not being selfish in things such as that, there was no credit taken by Nehemiah in the events here and how they turned out. But instead, all credit was given to God. Look at your songbooks. Take a songbook and look at number 361. 361. The song kept coming to mind as I was kind of going through this lesson, and just thinking, 4 months. There are some times where I think I could have never have waited 4 months to take care of something that was on my plate in front of me, and how Nehemiah waited, you know, until the time was right, until God opened the right doors, you know, to deal with the situation that was in front of him. Think about those things a little bit as we sing this song, number 361.
In his time.